Welcome to this podcast from the Royal College of General Practitioners. I'm Sally Higginbottom, and today I'm going to be interviewing Steve Holmes, a GP, a regional respiratory clinical lead in the Southwest and for Somerset CCG, and also involved with a UK Lung Cancer Coalition for the last 10 years. And today we're going to be talking about lung cancer detection in primary care. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Sally, and hello, everybody.
So, thanks so much for talking to me about lung cancer, Steve. I'm hoping we can try to unpick some of the tricky issues around investigation and screening today.
Yeah, I hope so too. It's a really important subject. I mean, I think I went away and looked at some of the numbers and found that there are 96 people dying every day from lung cancer. That's an incredible number when we think that there are five people that die every day from road accidents. Actually, 450 people roughly that are dying from cancers every day. So lung cancer is roughly a fifth of every cancer death in the UK still. And in a way, it's always disappointing because we could do an awful lot better in trying to get that diagnosis earlier and get the prognostic indications better, a prognostic situation better for our patients.
Absolutely. So the first test for people we suspect might have lung cancer is usually a chest x-ray. How likely is that to pick up a lung cancer?
I think it's the mainstay of our investigations if we're seeing people. And a lot of the evidence when we look back sort of suggests that around the 75 to 80% pickup rate of lung cancers will be detected on a chest x-ray if we request. But that means that there's 25%, 20 to 25% of cancers that will be missed with a chest x-ray. So probably key clinical tip, if it's sounding very much like lung cancer and the chest x-ray is normal, it may well still be sensible to refer under that 2-week rule.
Okay. And hemoptysis is often seen as a really important clinical sign in lung cancer, but it's not actually that common. Is that right?
It's not always that common, but if you do find somebody who is coughing up blood without any particular evident cause, then that is a really strong predictor of lung cancer. And in the most recent NICE guidance, the recommendation there is don't worry about a chest x-ray, refer straight away so that the patient can be booked in for hopefully a high-resolution CT scan and see the specialist within that 2-week period because it's so likely. And that's actually due to the work of Willie Hamilton, one of our GP colleagues down in Exeter.
Absolutely. So presence of hemoptysis is very concerning. Absence of hemoptysis doesn't mean that you're safe from lung cancer.
Absolutely. Yes, I agree with that.
Thinking about symptoms, there's a fairly obvious chest-related symptoms of cough or shortness of breath, chest pain, and recurrent chest infections. Or chest signs that might look like lung cancer. But are there any other vaguer symptoms we might want to think about investigating for lung cancer?
Yes, I would probably have a low threshold for asking for a chest x-ray in somebody with fatigue. I know that often we do fatigue series of bloods. I think we quite often forget to think about wider and think about imaging, certainly in people who may have a previous history of smoking. Also, the non-specific weight loss and appetite loss are important features just to think through. Is this a hidden malignancy on the way? Those would be the main things on top of the cough or shortness of breath that we are probably most familiar with.
And when we've done some tests for patients, quite often the full blood count will come back marginally abnormal. And I think we're all increasingly aware of thrombocytosis as a pointer for certain cancers. Is that right?
Yes, I mean, thrombocytosis, I think now should be one of those sort of hidden areas where we do go on the hunt for another cancer. Again, if it's unexplained by other reasons that we can clearly see. And one of the more recent things people have spoken about is LEGO C. That is types of cancer that are often associated with a raised platelet count. Lung cancer, endometrial cancer, and two of the GI ones, gastric and esophageal cancers, along with the C at the end being colorectal. So LEGO C, if you're not familiar with that. And that means that we should probably be looking towards identifying and fast-tracking those patients for more comprehensive testing if we're uncertain.
And I think it's an interesting point, isn't it, as to whether our chest x-ray we should come up in our minds the same way I think there's something wrong bloods do. When we just think there's something not quite right with a patient, we will do a fairly standard set of bloods, most of us, and maybe we should also always think, and maybe a chest x-ray.
And that may be the case for perhaps another 2 or 3 years, but I've recently been involved with some colleagues, which is for the Task Force for Lung Health. And that is where the RCGP, along with 30 other charities, have combined to try to improve respiratory outcomes. When I've been working with some of our respiratory interested radiology colleagues, they would be strong advocates. And we have written a paper suggesting that really, when we're thinking about lung cancers, we probably should be going straight for a high resolution CT scan, which is much more specific and hopefully would give us that answer earlier. And hopefully in your areas, like in mine, you can access those straight out without having to go through protracted processes to do it. I can get a HRCT scan in the same way that I can get a chest x-ray.
Oh, that's impressive. I don't think I can quite yet, but I usually can if I phone a radiologist. That's my workaround, which sort of brings us to questions of screening, really. Why are people looking at lung cancer screening?
I think we're looking at lung cancer screening because we know if it's diagnosed late, the prognosis is very poor. And that's been the case for quite a lot of time where many patients are diagnosed later on in the disease. So perhaps like we do with cervical cancer, with other types of cancer, if we can pick up the cancer at an early stage, we can improve the survival rate for our patients and indeed their quality of life. That's true in the data that we have increasingly in the UK, in that if you have a localized tumor with no evidence of spread, then with a surgical intervention, the prognosis is much better than clearly when you've got an extensive tumor in the chest that spread and metastasized and has lymph nodes in other areas. So part of this has been trying to get imaging that will detect a cancer at an early stage and help us to intervene at an early stage.
One of the things I found writing the module on lung cancer was I was surprised how little survival had improved in lung cancer over the last few years compared with in other cancers. I don't just mean the last few years, the last few decades. It is depressingly similar to the 1970s, as far as I can tell. And that's presumably because so many are detected at a point where curative treatment is not possible.
I think you're right. I'm perhaps a little bit more positive than you are. I think we have done notoriously badly compared to many other colleagues in Europe and places in Europe. And part of that was due to delays in getting the diagnosis right. And part of that was due to the fact we didn't have as many lung-based thoracic surgeons who intervened at an early stage compared to many of our European counterparts. We now have a lot more thoracic surgeons capable of undertaking appropriate lung cancer surgery. We also have hopefully more rapid ways of diagnosing our patients earlier. And that has resulted in significant improvements. We are catching up with the rest of the world now. We're not there yet, but we're on the ascent, which is really good news. And equally so, the more people we can get at an early stage in their diagnostic in the tumour, the better that prognosis. Really interesting to note that those that are picked up in primary care have a better outcome than those that are picked up initially in secondary care. A lot of those presenting to an emergency department or being investigated over a protracted period and then the cancer being found. So keep going in primary care. We should be able to make differences there.
That's great. Now, thinking about imaging, you mentioned high-res CT scans, but my understanding is for screening, they're talking about low-dose CT. Can you run through the difference or how we might think about that?
Yes, when I normally think about dosage for imaging, I have in my mind that a chest x-ray is usually about 2 to 3 days of background radiation for somebody in many parts of the UK. However, in some parts of the UK, like Cornwall, the background radiation is 2 or 3 times higher. And so it's, for some people, it's like going to Cornwall for the weekend. A HRCT scan is actually relatively low dose in that it's 9 to 12 days of radiation, compared to what, several months for some of the thoracic spine imaging we do, and many months for things like lumbar spine x-rays. So actually, even with that increased detail radiologically, we're not actually exposing our patients to a considerable amount more radiation. And that's why I think many of the radiologists are keener that we develop those sort of imaging, which is more specific, not greatly more radiation, and it gives us a better chance of getting good outcomes.
So what's the evidence that we've got so far on screening in the UK?
Well, at the moment, we're probably going to be looking more at targeted case finding of those that seem to be more at risk. And they're an important group to try to identify and diagnose early. And it fits in with some of the bigger world studies where, and the main one that people talk about is the Nelson study, which was offering 3 episodes of CT scanning over a decade and showed a 24% earlier identification of lung cancers over that 10-year period. So they actually reduced lung cancer deaths by 24%. I guess we probably ought to think about the implications of screening, though, because having imaging done, where often if you spot a nodule, you undergo quite a lot of tests, has psychological implications for the patient. And at times, if it's unclear on a nodule, we may want to have more invasive testing to actually take a biopsy of it. And I think that comes into the phrase of VOMIT, victim of medical imaging and technology, where people actually sustain problems because of what we do to them, because we pick something up on a scan. VOMIT comes from the US at the moment, but it's an interesting concept that actually that test might not be a cancer, but we can do harm with that test from the interventions we try to do, both psychologically and physically.
I think that's right. And the other thing that struck me reading about the Nelson study is that they're reporting a reduction in lung cancer deaths, but not in total deaths. And some of those people might have suffered harm or even death from the treatment associated with their lung cancer, including their surgery or the radiotherapy. And we know from breast cancer treatment that the heart impacts of thoracic radiotherapy can be substantial. So I'm just, that would be my caution. It's not that 24% of people, fewer people died, it's 24% fewer people died of lung cancer. So I think we'd need to look at it slightly in the round before we hung out the bunting for that screening.
Yes, it's still one of those sort of areas where we're thinking, is this going to be the right way forward? And I think that's probably from the fact that at the moment our improvement in survival rates has been so poor in lung cancer, like it has been in ovarian and like it has been in pancreatic cancers.
I think it's probably also worth us noting that many patients with lung cancer are polymorbid, because the risk factors for lung cancer overlap with the risk factors for COPD and heart disease and stroke and other cancers. Does that also impact on the effectiveness of screening?
It does. And I think it also it impacts on the prognosis following that, which may be partly accounted for by reducing lung cancer deaths, but no overall mortality improvement. Indeed, it's probably sensible if we are reviewing somebody with coronary heart disease who has a smoking history to always be thinking at that annual review, are there any symptoms there that might suggest lung cancer at an early stage? Because we'll see that in primary care. And similarly, if their breathlessness in their heart review is ongoing, think about COPD as well. Certainly in COPD, I think there's a 5 to 6 fold increase in lung cancer in that specific group. Again, probably mainly linked into the smoking history and the legacy we have of smoking in the UK.
Okay. The only other concern I have about potential screening is a sort of system-wide issue of if we divert radiology resource from the symptomatic to the non-symptomatic, is that going to have an impact? Do we have the staff and facilities to roll out high-risk CT for these groups?
I think you're spot on there. We are in a situation in the NHS where we often are understaffed at the current time, and we've got to try and make the best use of what we can when we're doing that. I think if we go for CT screening in a large way, then that's going to leave us quite prone to having a reduction in the number of radiologists available for other imaging reporting. If we change from a chest X-ray to a CT scan, then all we're doing is changing one type of report for another. And if we're encouraging radiologists, like many specialists, to have more expertise in certain areas, and chest X-rays, CT scans of the chest are incredibly common, then hopefully the speed and accuracy of diagnosis and of reporting can be speeded up. And don't forget artificial intelligence coming through at the moment and the computerized processes for that.
Absolutely. So cervical screening is now essentially a lab-based system, which involves far fewer humans, which has sped things up no end. And we could hope for the same here. While we're talking about lung cancer, we've talked about smokers quite a bit, but a considerable proportion of lung cancers are in non-smokers. Is there anything else you want to say about lung cancer or who we should think about?
Yeah, really important to think about the probably about 20% of people who aren't smokers, who often feel quite stigmatized because they feel as though everybody thinks they must have been a smoker and that's why they've got it. In the same way that the smokers who probably for reasons that aren't due to their pure desire to keep smoking cigarettes, but linked to social situations and being hooked on a very addictive tobacco addiction, end up with these cancers. The important thing about people who are not smokers is we tend to diagnose those people quite a lot later than we would do those that are smokers, because we don't think of the diagnosis. And it is important to just keep thinking with it, like any cancer, is this a potential cancer in some of our younger patients that are presenting with worrying symptoms? The second part to think through with that is, if we do detect a lung cancer in a non-smoker, and certainly in one of our younger age groups, the under 40s, 50s or so, quite often those people have types of tumour that will actually respond very well to some of the more modern biologics we have available and are getting very impressive improvements in survival rate. So that sort of group, even though they may have metastases at diagnosis, because they're presenting late, can often do very well with the new treatments that are coming through at the current time.
So it's very worthwhile to keep thinking of it as a possibility, keep testing. And we look forward to the changes that are coming in terms of imaging. I have to say that increase in radiation from CT scans is much, much lower than I'd have had in mind, and shows, I think, that the technology has really moved on over the last few years. So I think that brings us to all I wanted to say about lung cancer. Steve, was there anything else you wanted to add today?
I guess the only thing that I would probably do is to encourage my colleagues to think about lung cancer if you're seeing people with other comorbidities that might suggest a previous tobacco type issue. Think about lung cancer if the symptoms fit but they haven't smoked, and keep going, because we are detecting these cancers at an earlier stage, and our thoracic surgical colleagues are getting better results with the surgery they're undertaking. And we have some of the biologics now that are making a difference in lung cancer. So we are starting to see that upward trend, but it's still going to be quite hard work to get those diagnoses early.
Thanks, Steve. And thank you for listening to this podcast from the RCGP.